From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, lobbying for and against the $15 minimum wage intensifies at the Capitol. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on education funding in New York. And we'll take you to a town hall meeting in the Hudson Valley about how to deal with the opioid epidemic. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Lobbying for and against the minimum wage is intensifying at the state capitol, with just over 2 weeks to go until the budget deadline. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Providers to people with developmental disabilities say they want their employees to earn more money. Steve Kroll with NYSARC says many staffers earn less than $15 an hour right now.
We support giving them pay hikes because their work is incredibly important. They get a tremendous amount of education and training to do that work. They work around the clock.
But he says salaries that the groups pay are tied to Medicaid contracts that they hold with New York State, and the Medicaid reimbursements were frozen for years under Governor Cuomo. Kroll says without a subsidy, they're left with no good choices.
We will end up either having to reduce the services we provide or having to have less staff, which is a horrible, horrible outcome.
My name is Arthur Mims, and I'm from the Independent Residence.
Arthur Mims, who is head of a self-advocacy group, spoke along with one of his caretakers, Tiffany Torres. Mims says Torres helps him with many things and deserves more money.
Takes a lot of us on appointments, and she cares about us. We were happy to have her when she became a staff at the Independent Residence, and we really want to keep her here more.
Torres is a certified medical worker and direct support professional. She says in the past, neglect of the disabled has led to dire consequences.
You cannot forget the horrors that come when you cut staff, when you cut funding. Look up Willowbrook. We know the history. We don't want to go back there.
Governor Cuomo has sent mixed messages about whether he will provide state subsidies to the developmentally disabled providers, as well as other not-for-profits that hold contracts with the state for services to the disabled, as well as home health care. Last month, Cuomo said he'd consider the matter as long as the providers were not making excess profits. Speaking this week after a rally to promote the $15 minimum wage, Cuomo said in the past, though, when the minimum wage has gone up, the state has not made up the difference in costs to the not-for-profits.
We raise the minimum wage all the time. We've raised it about 8 times over the past couple of decades. We have never adjusted the contracts to reflect the minimum wage increase.
But Kroll with NYSARC says the state also has never proposed raising the wage so high so fast.
There's no precedence of raising the minimum wage 65% over 6 years. There's no precedence of holding us to no funding increase for 6 straight years, no cost of living increase.
The groups did receive a 4% increase in last year's budget. They say that was retroactive, though, to an 8-year period. Catholic Church leaders also brought up the issue in a meeting with Governor Cuomo. The church runs hospitals as well as Catholic charities. They're also dependent on Medicaid reimbursements for large portions of their budgets. New York Cardinal Timothy Dolan, in an interview with public radio and TV, says Cuomo told him he would consider helping the Catholic groups.
We're not going to be able to meet that. So yeah. All we said to the governor is, hey, we're with you. Just make sure, in one way, we're an employee of yours in providing service, so make sure the money you give us allows us to pay that minimum wage to. And he said, good point.
So you think that will end up in the budget?
I hope so. I think so.
Dolan says the church supports a living wage for workers, but leaves the exact amount up to the experts. The cardinal gave the blessing at the governor's minimum wage rally that was held at the state capitol. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week you spoke with Billy Easton. He's the executive director of the Alliance for Quality Education. And you talked with him about, well, a longstanding issue, and that is the inequities in the education system in New York.
Well, look, Billy Easton is doing the work of the angels. He is saying basically that our kids come first. We have to make sure that every kid gets a proper education, and he's fighting for more resources. And he does that in a number of ways. They file lawsuits, and the lawsuits are basically upheld by the courts and saying, yeah, the Constitution says you got to provide everybody with a first-class education, but you have a governor who decides what he's going to do and not. You know, if you have a rule or a law that's passed by the legislature that says you can't raise the property taxes in a town, that means that the schools are going to get hurt also, that the schools can't have what they once had. Taxpayers don't want to pay more taxes, so it gets to be pretty murky. We do know that there are some school districts in the state of New York, Scarsdale and others, that do extremely well. And then we have some challenged districts which don't do well at all. I threw at Billy Easton the question that you hear from everybody, and that is, okay, how come New York spends more money than everybody, and yet they don't have the same educational outcome that other places which spend less money are? Well, there are a lot of reasons for that, and Billy Easton knows that. But in fact, we don't know what to do about that. It's that simple. We try our best. We try to pay teachers what they're worth. We get a governor who comes along and attacks the teachers and says, we have to find better ways to evaluate our teachers. Read that, kick them out. And, you know, the teachers, of course, get so angry at him that he gets a million fewer votes in his second election than he did in his first election. So educational politics are alive and well. The teachers are an extremely potent force, and they are the best things that we have in the state. Those are the best people we have. And when governors attack them, you know what's going to be the result. People aren't going to like the governor because we all had great teachers. We all know put us on the path of in life to whatever successes we've enjoyed. And we don't like to hear politicians climbing on the shoulders of teachers. Billy Easton, of course, is doing a good job. The legislature, especially the assembly, wants to spend the money. The Senate apparently does not. And then every year you get the rich districts versus the poor districts fighting with each other in terms of the, quote, formula that they use. And every year there's a sort of a compromise. I get it. I know why they do that, but I don't like it.
The governor has been trying to repair, it appears, his relationship with teachers and teachers' unions. But as you suggested, the votes weren't there the last time. Will they be there if he runs for a third term?
Well, it's interesting. The teachers' unions, the people who are sitting at the top, they'll make peace with the governor. They have to. They have no choice. But individual teachers still have a vote. And when I talk to individual teachers and I say, what do you think of this guy? They're never going to forget what he did to them, how he tried to climb on their shoulders. So that while their organizations will be for making peace with the governor, I don't think that the hearts and minds of the teachers are necessarily going to do the same thing.
The issue of opioids, Alan, and we see a report out this week nationally, but it of course affects New York and all states in the country are dealing with this problem, and that is the issuance of prescription painkillers and some more limitations on that. We learned the first time around that the limitations on some of the prescriptions like OxyContin is what pushed people to opioids in the first place.
Well, that's the latest thinking. I'm not quite sure what happened here. But all of a sudden, states, communities are opening their eyes and saying, hey, we got this real problem here. Now, the conventional wisdom right now, I'm not sure it's right, but the conventional wisdom is so many people were taking opioids when their prescriptions ran out, they went to heroin, and now we have a heroin epidemic on top of the opioid epidemic. You know, when I had a back operation, they gave me OxyContin. I didn't use one of them. I mean, you know, there are those of us who just see this stuff as poison. And yet there are people who get hooked. So now the idea is don't give a lot of pills. Give just a few. make sure that, you know, you monitor what's going on. And shake your finger at doctors and say, doctors, we know you mean well, but this is not helping anything. And so it's a question of what kind of laws you pass on both the federal and state level. Now we see, for example, that doctors are not being allowed to prescribe in New York anymore in terms of just using their prescription pads. They have to use electronic stuff so you know exactly what they're doing because their handwriting is classically terrible. And that fits in also. So it's not just going to be a matter of, you know, writing a prescription. And now we're going to see now I know theoretically we were already supposed to, but now we're going to be able to see every piece of information, how many doctors are doing it, who they're prescribing to, and what kind of abuse we see as a result.
We learned late this week, Alan, that New York apparently is going to lose another congressional seat.
It's a huge piece of information. It's not that New York loses people. It's that other states grow faster. And the way that this is done is they add up all the people in the United States, and then they go to each state and they say, okay, your proportion of the whole is thus and so. New York lost one the last time. They're going to lose another one this time, it looks like, because, again, you have a choice of living in California or sunny Texas or sunny Florida or paying bills in New York. What are you going to do? And New York has very high taxes. Now, that may be because people expect and want services for their tax money. Nevertheless, we do see this migration to the sunnier climes.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York's Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul was in Schenectady this week touring a construction site at the New Rivers Casino and Resort. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas tagged along and filed this report.
The old Alco site has been transformed. The former eyesore is a beehive of construction activity. Hochul hopped aboard a CDTA bus with Schenectady Mayor Gary McCarthy, developer David Bucco, and a battalion of local reporters for a hitch across the grounds. Bucco is CEO and president of the Gillespie Group, the project developer.
I come over here every weekend and watch the construction and see what has happened the previous week. We've done a lot. We did Golub's building right across the street there. Their headquarters, actually, that was part of the Alco site too. The Erie Canal used to go right through the Alco site. We've invested over $150 million in downtown Schenectady as well.
Hochul says the Rivers Project gives the region new hope.
This area had seen better days, certainly, when we had the American locomotive here. We had 40,000 jobs with GE, and then we fell on some tough times here. And to have the visions of the individuals here and our mayor and elected officials who came together to support what the governor wants to do, which is to bring new life to downtown areas like this and to capitalize on this incredible location, long forgotten and abandoned, right here on one of our greatest treasures, which is the canal.
Bucco agrees it's all about location and a mile of prime waterfront real estate with a harbor for boat accessibility.
This was one of the entrances coming from the north of the city, and if you drove by it, it's just a bunch of abandoned buildings. So from that standpoint, it's kind of embarrassing for the city, and it's a problem upstate New York had. We put highways, railroads, or factories on our waterways instead of taking advantage of them. 787 is a prime example. Look what Albany would be if they had that waterfront.
Bucco brought Hochul up to speed on progress at the river's site.
And we're actually the front of the walkway here. We'll have a swimming pool for the hotel guest or the apartment. And then we've got a national chain that's going to go right here. And we could put about 50 boat slips. One of the thoughts, Gary, was if we could ever get ice, maybe you have RPI Union play an outdoor game like they've done in that.
Crews broke ground on the site last month, and the hope is to have the casino open in early 2017, the hotel that fall. Construction is ahead of schedule, thanks to a record mild upstate winter. Mayor McCarthy tells Time Warner Cable News he anticipates a recharge of the Electric City, making it a destination.
We're doing this in a manner to complement what we're doing downtown. So you see Proctor's and the rebirth that's happened there. This is just an expansion of that.
This is going to branch out. We're going to have new transportation corridors to get people who live in places like Amsterdam to get the transportation here. So this is going to have a regional ripple effect, which is exactly what we expected. Is in addition to substantial tax revenues coming to the taxpayer of these communities, the city and the county as a result of this when it's in full swing. So this is a great day. I just wanted a progress report, and I feel very confident that we're on schedule, and the future of this area is very bright.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
A group dedicated to reducing child hunger has released a new report that shows New York ranks low among the 50 states in providing students with breakfast. That story from the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
Hunger Solutions New York released a report Thursday that provides more details on schools participating in school breakfast programs. The takeaway, New York can do better. Jessica Pino Goodspeed is a child nutrition specialist and author of School Breakfast, Reducing Child Hunger, Bolstering Student Success.
We rank 39th in the nation, and which is really concerning. It's a lot of kids missing out on an important meal, and which is important to their academic success. And then also it's a lot of federal funding that we forfeit that could be going to hungry kids.
The report shows that nearly $80 million in federal reimbursement was forfeited by New York due to low school breakfast participation last year. Of more than 1.5 million students qualified to eat free or reduced price breakfast, only 28% actually did. Speaking in Albany at the New York State Museum, Sherry Tomasky, Public Affairs Director for Hunger Solutions, says there has been progress across the state in districts accessing federal support.
Districts that have adopted the community eligibility provision have made tremendous gains in the number of children that they can feed on any given day with the school breakfast program. And those school districts are models for the rest of the state.
In fact, one of the most successful in New York is the Schenectady City School District. Superintendent Larry Spring said programs like Breakfast in the Classroom for elementary school students has boosted attendance.
The first year that we started doing universal free breakfast, we saw an immediate and significant increase in the numbers of students that were attending more than 95% of the time, and a significant decrease in students who are chronically absent.
The students also see the benefit. Jeff Nee is a student at North Albany Academy, a K through 8 school in the Albany City School District.
I think breakfast is helpful for every student, so they don't fall asleep in class and they can learn all the stuff they need to do so they can get in a good school, cool college, and a good job.
Hunger Solutions New York is hoping the report can lead to state action to get more districts to offer free breakfast programs. Capital Region Assemblyman Angelo Santa Barbara said that starts with fair school funding. Santa Barbara said legislation like the Small Cities School Bill, which would tweak the school aid formula, is a good place to start.
It talks about the school being a community center. The services that they provide, that really falls on the district to make sure that they provide these services, because if they don't, educational outcomes do not improve.
For more information and a link to the report, visit WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Days after unveiling legislation to combat the opioid epidemic and stop mass incarceration of lower-level drug offenders, Hudson Valley Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney held a telephone town hall to discuss the problem in his district. Constituents raised issues of educating students, offering more support meetings, and mandating insurance companies to better cover treatment. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
Democratic Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney fielded questions from 8 Hudson Valley residents over the course of an hour. Donna from Blooming Grove in Orange County says 2 of her 3 kids attend Washingtonville High School, and she wants students to be educated in the classroom about the dangers of heroin and opioids.
Around prom time, they have the mock, the disaster. They bring the totaled car into the parking lot and have a speaker come and talk to the kids about drinking and driving. Well, I think that needs to be done about this heroin and opiate crisis that's going on here.
Yeah, I like that. And I think it's really important because we all have a role to play and kids got to know this stuff is deadly.
Meanwhile, Cynthia voiced frustration with trying to help her son.
My son started heroin when he was in the 10th grade at Temple Hill. I live in Newburgh, and he's been on it ever since. He's been off it for 6 months now. But the problem is he has nowhere to go. When he wants to go to a meeting or if he feels an urge to use, he has no meeting to go to. There are not enough meetings, AA meetings, NA meetings in the city of Newburgh. Considering the problem is so large, you would think that we would have meetings around the clock so that when he's at 8 o'clock at night, he calls me up and he's like, I want to use. I'm going to go use. I can't find a meeting. I don't know what to tell him.
Don Wilkin is with Team Newburgh, a nonprofit coalition serving the Newburgh and Large City School District. The coalition works to strengthen collaboration among all facets of the community and lower substance abuse among young people.
I know in Dutchess County they started some opiate-specific support groups, so that could be something we could look to try to replicate in the city of Newburgh for those, because we do know transportation is an issue for a lot of residents in the city.
Debbie, calling in from near Port Jervis in Orange County, also voiced concern about the dearth of meetings.
My son's an addict. He's getting out of prison soon. I'm terrified because there are no programs for him to go to. Well, not a lot of places to go for meetings.
Martin Colavito, also with Team Newburgh, told Debbie about a few meeting spots near her and gave her his cell phone number, offering to help guide the treatment path via Catholic Charities.
If you call me, I will be honored. I will be absolutely honored to navigate you through that process with Catholic Charities.
Lisa from Fishkill says her son is a recovering addict, while praising some resources in Dutchess County, like CAPE or the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County. She echoes Cynthia's complaint that there are not enough support group meetings, both for recovering addicts and their loved ones. She says there is another problem.
One of the things we need to do is to address the insurance, because right now I have insurance through work. However, when they do go to rehab, you have to play it week by week, day by day, see if it's going to be addressed, if they're going to extend the insurance. Are they going to extend the insurance? Quite honestly, for any success, you have to be in there for at least 90 days, at least.
Maloney told her he would look into it. Also during the call, Maloney referred to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention having issued guidelines March 15th for prescribing opioids for chronic pain. Amid talk about doctors prescribing painkillers too frequently and in too great amounts, John from Putnam Valley, who identified himself as working in the healthcare industry, offered suggestions.
I would say that as a condition of relicensing, that all prescribers have to complete some type of continuing education regarding this problem, and perhaps make a pledge that they will not be involved with over-prescribing medications. And secondly, when a prescription is being picked up at a pharmacy, that the pharmacy clearly identifies to the person picking up the medication that they will accept that medication back that's unused.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I like that a lot.
Throughout the call, Maloney and Team Newburgh representatives offered phone numbers and websites, some of which are on our website at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1612. Or just listen on the web, wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.